the full of Tracy Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:44 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is August 3rd. I thought it would kick off with the Nifty Index in India. It was breaking out of a two-month range in here today, so that's a pretty strong performance. And India continues to benefit from lower interest rates overall, the continued supply of new money. And these are very similar to the kinds of conditions that are helping to inflate asset prices everywhere. So India also has the added benefit that it isn't China. And when people start to think about whether they should have money invested in China, and they start looking around for, well, where's the other big high population country with a lot of growth potential and a domestic tech sector? Well, then that's got to be India. And this has been a pretty orderly consolidation in the region at the upper side of the underlying range. So this is still in an uptrend, and it is an impressive short-term breakout. And then we can also just take a quick look at the currency, because the Indian rupee has been reasonably steady. So in some cases, we can see that the appreciation of the stock market tends to go in line with the depreciation of the currency, but the rupee has been strengthening over the last couple of weeks. So we're certainly seeing a lot more interest in India. What I find also rather interesting is that the Pakistani market, which is considerably smaller and also then much less invested in by foreign investors, continues to exhibit relative strength. But the other point that's, I think, worth considering is that India had a massive flare-up in Delta virus cases a few months ago, and it has pretty much disappeared. And now we can see also that places like Indonesia have been suffering with their own rising number of cases, and yet when we think about the stock market, it has continued to find support in the region of the trend mean. So this there is certainly at least some evidence to suggest that the ability of the virus to have a clear effect on markets is waning. It doesn't mean that the costs associated with dealing with it are going to evaporate. In fact, it probably means that the worries that people have about it will only ensure that we continue to have money printing going forward, because with the inconveniences that it causes and the upward pressure that it puts on prices, well, money will have to be printed in order to help people get through the difficulties that they have, but that the emergency measures that have been put in place are less relevant. The one place that is significantly ramping up its precautionary measures at present is China, and a good part of the reason for that is that its own range of domestic vaccines was less than effective. So they're going to have to start giving booster shots of Western vaccines, and that is a time-consuming process. And despite those challenges, there are plenty of other things that are going on in China. The Shanghai Composite has been pulling back sharply last week, rebounded impressively yesterday, and was down a tad in here today. And then we had all the news about Tencent, where it was called the opium of the mind, or the opium of the soul, in a post this morning. That post has subsequently been removed, and the share bounced off the region of the lows from last week. It's very oversold in the short term, so it's not beyond the bounds possibility that we get a bounce in here tomorrow. This isn't the first time that the Communist Party has taken aim at the computer gaming sector. It's unlikely to be the last. And this is still a downtrend overall, but we have a short-term oversold condition, so there's certainly potential for some additional upside. One thing that I thought was interesting is that even the kinds of stocks that are very heavily favored by the administration, they have clearly stated that they want to have a strong battery manufacturing sector, they want to have a semiconductor sector. Well, BYD was up today, but not quite at the highs of the day. It's had a very impressive rebound. We're right in the region of the peaks, so there's the potential for some consolidation. But the one big advantage that companies like this have is that they have clear backing from the government, whereas the education sector, the large cap, the gaming sector, and then companies like Tencent, Alibaba, Meituan, and BYD, or excuse me, JD, they all have targets painted on their back because they've become too powerful. From the perspective of a long-term investor, I think it's very hard to justify why one has to be in China. If one's a trader, well, then there's the potential for a lot of volatility, and there are plenty of trading strategies work with lots of volatility. But from an investor's perspective, sometimes it's about the return of your capital rather than the return on the capital. And I think that's one of the big takeaways from everything that's going on there. Then we can also think about Vietnam, where we have at least evidence of short-term support that's coming in the region of the previous peak, and bouncing from the region of the trend mean. So this is still a consistent trend. The size of the recent pullback is almost identical to the one that we saw in January, and equally bouncing impressively from the region of the trend mean. This looks and continues to look like a bull market overall for Vietnam, and Vietnam is coming out of the pandemic as one of the big beneficiaries of a migration of manufacturing. And Mexico, in nominal terms, continues to push on to test the highs from back in 2017. So we've had a meaningful rebound in the Mexican stock market. And when we look at that in not just in local currency terms, but in US dollar terms to adjust for the weakness of the peso over the last 8 years, well, then it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. So Mexico is also likely to be a country that benefits from some reorientation of globalization. I think that's particularly relevant. And then I think also if we look at where manufacturing is starting to migrate to, I've seen an increase just in walking around shops and looking at where things are manufactured. I've seen a large number of furniture items that used to be manufactured in China are now manufactured in India. I've seen that batteries that we bought from Amazon were manufactured in Indonesia rather than China. So there is certainly some change in how items are being sourced, and that is likely to benefit some Asian countries more than others. And of course, that's all on top of the fact that the cost of doing business in China has also increased substantially. But then, of course, we can think about shipping all of those items from different locations around the world. So instead of going to a small number of ports and loading up ships at large container ports, well, then we're going to have to see a lot more destinations because there are more manufacturing locations and they're geographically diverse, and that increases costs. So the Baltic Dry Index remains really quite firm. And then the European carbon credit price is still very steady, but is not breaking on the upside. So they seem to be relatively content to accept a price somewhere north of 50 euros. The oil price, having pulled back sharply yesterday, initially followed through on the downside in here today, but then closed off its low. So we've had a reasonable rebound in risk assets in here today, and oil has certainly been one of those, and it's demonstrating at least near-term support around the $70 area. The S&P 500, having been weaker yesterday, rebounded in here today and pushed back to the upper side of the range. But again, this is a very inert range overall, and it's been up one day and down the next. So the big question is, in what direction is the breakout going to occur? And this is all going to tie down to liquidity in the short term. bond yields continued to compress, and it's still a downtrend overall. And as long as it remains a downtrend, and as long as there's the potential that the US government will be issuing fewer bonds and the Federal Reserve will be restricted from curtailing their purchases in a timely manner, well, then that's likely to continue to support asset prices. The VIX index pulled back in here today and unwound yesterday's advance, but there's still an upward bias. So it's going to have to follow through on the downside in order to clearly demonstrate that some of the risk continues to be taken out of the market. As we look at what the outlook is, I'm coming around to the opinion that the Delta variant is almost like a Goldilocks scenario for the global stock markets. It's a sufficiently large threat that it is causing governments and central banks to refrain from tightening, but it's not sufficiently a big enough threat to really promote significant lockdowns. And when particularly for countries that have got high rates of vaccination, well, then they don't have the same rationale for locking down either. Instead, I think it is much more likely that there will be vaccine mandates because that will ensure that governments don't have to lock down. Having tied themselves to the need for vaccinations, they are going to continue on that route. So it would suggest that we're going to continue to see efforts to get as many people vaccinated as possible. The specter of the Delta variant will continue to be used as the rationale for forcing a vaccine mandate, and it will also help to ensure that central banks don't withdraw supply of new money from the system. So generally, that should be beneficial. If, on the other hand, we start to see aggressive moves by the Federal Reserve to try and reduce the quantity of bonds that they're buying, well, then that would withdraw liquidity from the system, and then obviously some of the more overvalued portions of the market would experience stress. Rather think that that's an unlikely scenario, which because of the Delta variant. So that's the rationale for thinking that it is the Goldilocks scenario. Now, gold prices continue to hold around the $1,800 area, and they were in mildly negative territory today, and the price has been very inert for a month already. But the most important thing is that it's holding this higher reaction low, and the gold equities are also continuing to steady, and this also looks like higher reaction low. And when we look at this over a longer period of time, this whole range over the last 12 months just looks like a first step above the base. When we think about the junior gold miners sector, well, it just about broke out in August of 2020, and now it's coming back into the area of the upper side of this range. There were a couple of failed breaks above 40 in that long base formation, and none of them held. So now, if it can hold the move above 40, well, then we're definitely back in a new bull market, and it looks increasingly likely that it will, in fact, be able to do that. And then we can think about, well, where is all of this money that's being printed being directed? Well, a lot of the plans that are being announced are reliant on ample supply of copper. Well, copper prices were off their lows but in negative territory in here today, and they continue to range here, and this range could be reasonably lengthy because we're in the region of the upper side of what's effectively a 15-year range. And it really doesn't feel like all that long ago, back in 2006 and 7, when the price got all the way up to the $4 area. So now we're consolidating above $4, and as long as it's doing that, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. copper is where the biggest secular bull market hypothesis resides, for the simple reason that we have supply inelasticity meets rising demand. We have whole ranges of new sources of demand that are lining up, and it just takes time to bring new supply to the market, and it can take upwards of a decade. So this is where the secular bull market hypothesis is clearest to observe. But gold, I think, is also in a secular bull market, and there's a simple reason for that, and it's that central bank psychology has changed. They have always been fearful of inflation, and they were willing to counteract inflationary pressures in the market. And at the moment, they are instead courting inflation. They're terrified of deflation, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to ensure that deflation doesn't take hold. And because there are still so many uncertainties and there are a lot of dislocations that have not been completely ironed out in the global economy, well, then there's no real way to measure just how transitory or not inflation is going to be. So they don't have a clear way to decide what does transitory mean. That's the big question that a lot of investors are asking. What do they mean by transitory? Do they think that transitory inflation is a few months, or is it a few years? We've heard from various portions of the semiconductor sector that some portions of the microcontroller sector, that inelasticity will be gone by the end of the year. Other parts, it might take a while longer. And the stocks, having pulled back fairly sharply in June, have been able to regroup and pushed on to a new high in here today. So this is still a benign environment overall for semiconductors. And it's also a benign environment for vaccine manufacturers. And Pfizer was up in a strong manner in here today and pushing on to a new, I think it's an all-time high. So that's a completion of a really quite lengthy range. Not quite an all-time high, but certainly a high that hasn't been seen since the year 2000. So this is the completion of an extraordinarily lengthy V-shaped recovery. And I guess we might consider it to be an awfully wide V, but this rounding characteristic is generally consistent with recoveries. And the big question for these kinds of companies is not so much about the fact that we might be looking at boosters, a third booster, and it feels, I think the thing that really occurred to me is that it feels like delay management. When you're at the at the airport and there's a delay and they say the delay is going to be half an hour, and after 20 minutes they tell you it's going to be another half an hour, and after 45 minutes they tell you it'll be another hour, and I just get the feeling that that's what's happening with these vaccines and boosters. So we know that Pfizer's vaccine is less effective after about 6 months, and we probably haven't had enough of an interval of time with the UK data to confirm whether the longer interval between the first and second doses is going to provide long-lasting protection. But we're currently looking at a third booster, and who says that there won't be a fourth booster? Well, that's great news for a company, because drug companies prosper on chronic conditions, and there's the potential that with the propensity of coronaviruses to mutate, that we could be looking at it turning into a endemic problem, which is analogous to a chronic condition, and therefore these companies that have been producing vaccines might get to sell them every year. So that's certainly something to bear in mind, or to at least consider, as the price comes up to potentially break out of what has been a 23-year range. And Moderna has continued to push on the upside as well. and is now starting to accelerate. So there's certainly the scope here that these vaccine producers have got more than a short-term boost, but that they have they're increasingly cornering a market which has got potentially longer-term appeal. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.